You're a linebacker. Did you still love that game last night?
Oh, I thought it was amazing last night. It was so much fun to watch. It was high scoring, but it had some great defensive plays wrapped in there. I mean, you had 3 defensive touchdowns. You had 5 interceptions. Five turnovers from Patrick Mahomes. You had a couple fumbles forced on Jared Goff. I mean, think about this. We're going to talk about the scoring and the numbers, but as a defensive player, you're just saying, I know I'm going to get my opportunity because of the way they were throwing the football. They weren't just the run games were really non-existent. And so, I didn't like the points, but in today's new NFL, teams are going to take a lot more chances. They're not just going to run the football like they normally do. And in a game last night where you knew you had to score points, as a defensive player, you kind of sit back and say, I kind of like that because I know I'm going to get my opportunity to make a big play.
Yeah, so Kirk, does the focus as a defensive player when you're in those type of games, does it just become about getting the football as opposed to, making a sack or, making a tackle? Does it become about the big plays if you're a defensive player in one of those games?
It turns out like this, Tony. It's if you get the opposing team to punt the football, that's a turnover. That's all you want. I mean, honestly, you're just trying to hold serve. You're trying to break serve. And if you're on offense, you're trying to hold serve. So defensively, hey, fellas, we just got to get a stop.
Somehow.
We can't forget that was 2 of the top 3 offenses in the National Football League. That's not going to happen every week. I was telling people, I was like, oh, this is the new NFL. Do you like it? I said, you think the Jets are going to be able to do that?
Or the Bills?
Yeah.
Hey, look, the Bills put 41 up a couple of weeks ago. Anyway.
Against the Jets.
I'm like, really? Like, come on, people. Let's just slow our horses down right now. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals aren't doing that.
No.
I mean, you just look around the National Football League. Like, not everyone's doing that. These were 2 elite teams that we were talking about in the National Football League, and they gave us our money's worth last night, man. It was an unreal environment being there, and it's like you left exhausted, but you still wanted more. I mean, that's the feeling I got.
Kirk Morrison is with us, the former Aztec, writes for The Athletic. We're going to talk about that with him in just a moment, but also pre- and post-game host for Rams football. Can the Rams win a Super Bowl with a defense that gives up 51 points and one that gives up 45 to New Orleans? I guess I could ask the same question about the Chiefs. Their 2 losses this year, Kirk, they've given up 91 points and lost.
Correct.
Or they scored 91 points, I'm sorry, and lost 2 games with 91 points. So can that win a championship, or is that just fun to watch?
It can win a championship because, like I mentioned before, what opposing offenses do you think can put up that amount of points?
The one that beat the Rams earlier.
Right. So, it's you got to hope for this. You got to hope that, New Orleans stumbles in the next couple weeks. They got a difficult schedule ahead. They still got Carolina twice. They got the Steelers. They got the Cowboys, who look a lot different now with their system. So I think I'm more and have to look at the New Orleans Saints and say if they don't, if they slip up, a game or 2, the Rams will have the number 1 seed. So that means that everyone has to come to Los Angeles for the road to the Super Bowl. If you had to go through New Orleans, I think it would be a little bit different. But I just feel like the Rams have the formula. It's just that which team are they going to go up against, though? The thing is, the NFL is all about matchups, and sometimes you may have a better matchup. But the Rams do have a bright spot in that Aqib Talib, the defensive back corner, who hasn't been around for the last couple, 8 weeks because he has a broken ankle. He had surgery. He'll be back, they think, after the bye week. So he's going to add to that defense. And look, think about it is, go back to 2007 with the best team in the NFL we saw in a long time. The Patriots went 18-1, and they were scoring record points, but their defense was still giving up 30-plus points. So it can get you to the Super Bowl. It's just you got to find a way to win that game. So that's why I got confidence that what they're doing right now offensively can get them there. Defensively, they just got to make enough stops.
Yeah, that's certainly like adding a player at the trade deadline virtually by getting a key.
Yes, with a key to leave, they'll only give up like 47 points a game. So
he'll be able to
change everything.
Let me ask you this, Kirk. By the way, Kirk Morrison joins us here on Gwen and Chris 97.3 The Fan. Fanny does pre and post game for the Rams as well, and he also writes for The Athletic.
I know.
Kirk, What's the atmosphere like on the sidelines? On TV, it's starting to feel a lot like we've seen for years at the Staples Center, where stars are lining up to come to these games. Is that what it's starting to turn into at the Coliseum?
Yeah, it's starting to get there. And the thing about it is they're only going to be there for, you know, really one more year right. after this. And it's crazy to think of what they've been able to just, to me, and I just kept making jokes about this, and I really shouldn't have, but, you know, the L.A. Coliseum is very old. It's not a venue in which you feel like you're going to be there for comfort. right. But last night, they made that place look unbelievable. I mean, from the way the pictures look, the overhead cameras, the blimp, just everything. And a lot of it had to do with the crowd, the atmosphere, just, you know, a winning football team. And with the Los Angeles Rams being able to kind of, you know, gather the football fans of Los Angeles, with UCLA being down, USC not where they've been at traditionally, the Dodgers, you know, guys, you know, lost in the World Series. So right now, the Rams are in a nice little sweet spot where they can capture a ton of fans with the way that they've been playing their brand of football. And I think that atmosphere has gotten people in Los Angeles to realize, look, football is still king. You know, people resonate with you in terms of who's your football team and where you're from. And I think that's why everybody really wants to be a part of what the Rams got going. I mean, when you see Jay-Z on the sidelines and, you know, last night, Roger Goodell, you know, one of the big bosses at ESPN, Bob Iger, one of the owners, shareholders, you know, was there last night, man. It was truly a spectacle. A lot of people who are just buying into what the Rams got going. And who's to say that when they move into their new stadium in about a year and a half, what it's going to be by then?
Yeah, and if they keep calling plays for Halle Berry, they're going to have her, yeah. and they should just keep doing a new celebrity every game, you know, on a touchdown play, and see how many new celebrities they can draw in. Kirk Morrison is with us. Last thing on the game last night, Kirk, as a defensive player, I understand it's the way the game is now, but the way 21 penalties were called, and most of them were holding right. and grabbing and pushing and that kind of thing on DBs and linebackers. Again, that I don't expect 105 points, but if I see that many penalties, I know that a lot of receivers are going to be running open because there's just no way you can stop guys like that.
Yeah, and you saw that in the first half where the referees called it really tight and they loosened up in the second half, and you just knew that the game was going to be played like that, especially like in the NBA. You know that filling out period in the beginning of the game, how the refs are going to call it. Tony, you know which umpire is out there. If he's got a small strike zone or he's got a wide strike zone. If he's got a small strike zone, be ready for bombs over Baghdad because balls are going to be flying over the fence. So I thought the officials had a lot to do with last night's scoring as well.
Because I did,
too. They let it be known early, hey, you're not going to be allowed to grab that little extra holding and all of that. And so I think the players had to adjust, and that's why you saw some of the numbers that we did last night.
Kirk, before we let you get out of here, I want to switch to your hometown. We want to talk about the Raiders a little bit. What do you think's going on in Oakland? They have said some things about John Gruden the last week. Derek Carr seeming to not be getting along on the sideline. Do you think they part ways with Derek Carr at the end of the season so John Gruden can get his own guy?
Well, I think that right now we know the Raiders are kind of jockeying for, you know, their draft order next year.
Yeah.
They want to get a pretty good draft pick. They've got two in the first round. And so I think they kind of want to be able to have their own say, meaning that they want that number one pick, because they get the number one pick, they're up for either trading it with other and get more first round picks, which they've already got. Three next year in the first round. They've got three. So they're just trying to get the best football players. I think what happens is when you've got a guy like Derek Carr, who wants to win, who feels that he can do, you know, he can go out there and win football games, but yet, you know, right now I think John Gruden realizes the way that he's traded away a bunch of talent. They're starting some undrafted guys, some rookies in some key spots, and that's difficult on a quarterback. So I can sense the frustration from Derek Carr. No one wants to be a veteran on a rebuild. Right now, that's what it is. You got veterans that are saying, hey, I'm in my prime years, and yet you want to go with this youth movement and almost want to lose. So, look, I definitely understand where Derek's coming from. It's just, it's a difficult thing the way that the Raiders have kind of, you know, basically imploded this team.
Interesting. Kirk Morrison, a great Raider, a great Aztec, yes, and indeed. a fantastic pre- and post-game show host. He does
writer.
Color commentating. He does writing. He's everything. And we're very proud of you, Kirk. Keep it up,
he's
man.
He's the Swiss Army knife in our game.
Keep it going, babe. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too, guys. Appreciate it. Also, I'll be on the call this weekend, Hawaii at San Diego State. So we enjoyed that one, the last one this weekend on ESPNU Saturday 7:30. So I enjoy seeing the Aztecs being able to call the ball game. For
we will be watching.
Definitely watching now.
Pick 'em segment. We don't pick every single game like almost every other show in history does. We pick a 3-point game, a 2-point game, and a 1-point game. And then we have an upset pick. Team that is underdog, they have to win the game. If they do, we get those points that they are underdog by.
See,
last week was a good week for Chris.
Horrible week for TG.
Yeah. Chris went 3-for-3, got 6 points. Tony went
0-for-3 and got no points.
He got no points. So
technically, I went 0-for-4.
That's right. You didn't get your upset pick either. So that makes the score 69-63 because we were tied going into last week. And now I have taken the lead. And it is my week to get to go first. So I get to look at the whole board, pick any game that I want to. And I am, boy, would that be stupid if I did them. They can't possibly lose again. They can't roll another egg out there. 3 points, Los Angeles Chargers over Arizona. That's a risk, though, because they just really stubbed their toes last week against Denver. They can't do it again. I'm going Chargers. How about your three-pointer?
My three-pointer is going to be the New Orleans Saints over Atlanta.
Okay. Thanksgiving matchup?
Let's see.
After you have your Thanksgiving meal, you can sit back, relax, and watch Drew Brees and company. All right. Now a 2-point pick. Oakland won last week. New England's not losing again. I'll go New England over the New York Jets. Eh. It's on the road. I don't like doing that on the road, but I don't see New England losing.
Yeah, I'm going to take my 2-point is going to be Baltimore.
So you're going to go against Oakland.
Yes.
Okay. You didn't want to leave that for me. I would have taken
absolutely
that as my 1-point pick. Now I have to find a 1-point
pick. What was your second
pick.
Game?
New England, yeah. Chargers for 3, New England for 2. And you're going New Orleans for 3, Baltimore for 2. Now the all-important 1-point game here, always a little tougher than the rest because those other games are off the board. I think I know who you're going to pick with your 1-point pick because I'm going to leave this game for you.
Mm.
I think I know. I don't know for sure, but I think I know. The game I actually feel the most confident in of all the games left is Carolina at home over Seattle. So I'm going to do that for 1 point. Even though it's a kind of a tight spread, only 3.5 points, I feel Carolina at home winning that game. So that's my 1-point pick. The rest of the games are all yours, sir, for 1 point.
Mm.
Who are you taking? You're going to do it.
I'm
please
taking
do it.
Dallas.
Oh, okay. Dallas over Washington.
Yes.
Okay, so now it's the upset pick. And that this is where Tony gets back into it because you are very good at your upset picks.
I've been good at this for pretty much.
And the upset pick you get, you know, if you really want to risk it, like you could take, because any game's on the board now, back on the board, and like, for example, Atlanta's underdog by 13 points. So if you were or I were to pick Atlanta and they won straight up, that'd be 13 points, which is an awful lot. But I don't think Atlanta's going to win, so I'm not going to pick them. My upset pick is going to be a game we just talked about a little bit ago. I'm going to go with Detroit on Thanksgiving at home against the Bears. There's a couple reasons. One, Trubisky's hurt a little bit. Two, Detroit coming off a nice win, usually plays well on Thanksgiving at home. And three, I just think the Bears are kind of due to lose a game. They're 7-3. I don't see them being 8-3. I see them having a great season. They're having a good season, but I just think they're due to lose one. I'll take Detroit as my upset for 4 points. And now you can pick whoever you like, sir.
I'm looking at two games here.
Which two?
I'm looking at Miami beating the Colts.
That would be a 9-pointer.
Or I'm looking at Seattle over Carolina.
Oh, going against
I like the way Carolina has played recent weeks. They've started to step up defensively. The question is, Carolina's lost two in a row. And they're going to be a team that's greedy for a win. On the flip side, I can see the Colts kind of sleepwalking in against this Miami team. I'm going to take Miami for the big upset.
Nine-pointer. Do you know how angry that's going to make me on Sunday? If I am celebrating a Miami victory.
And you're celebrating my win.
And then I
well.
Realize that you just got 9 points against me.
That's kind of what I'm going for right now.
I knew you were doing that. You're putting me in between a rock and a hard place is what you're doing.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I'll be rooting for Miami. So Ryan Tannehill's back, baby. Dolphins are going to make their playoff push. All right, Scraby, you ready?
Born ready.
You're not born ready. But
I mean, the Ball family is part of the Big Five today.
Oh, is it ever?
I'm scared. Here we go.
Is it ever?
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
Did you guys ever think, actually?
Number five.
Did you guys ever think that flirting would get you in trouble?
Flirting.
Have you ever flirted and gotten in trouble? Flirted with a member of the opposite sex or anybody?
What point in my life are we talking about?
Any point. Do you ever think that flirting would get you in trouble?
Not after I got out of college, that flirting can get you in trouble. But after before then, it was all good.
Chris, this is not the Big Five question.
Oh. I don't want to answer this
question. Well, if
it
you
just
go
seems to like I can only get into trouble with it.
Okay.
No, I've never flirted before, so I wouldn't know what you're talking about.
I totally believe you. If you want to go to the University of Arkansas, though, you can't flirt because the football program announced the suspensions of two players yesterday after following reports that they were spotted flirting with Mississippi State cheerleaders before a 52-6 loss Saturday in Mississippi State. Razorbacks head coach Chad Morris did not really specify what led to the punishments for the defensive backs Cameron Curl and Ryan Pulley, other than to say they engaged in, quote, unacceptable behavior. Coach Morris went on to say, quote, it's completely unacceptable in all areas of the program. That was according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You guys are looking at me like,
what in the world is going on right now?
This is my fault. This is how I organized it. It's a bad organization of this. But anyway, they got in trouble. They were taking photos and talking with female members of the Mississippi State Spirit Squad before the Razorbacks went through their warm-up. So, Tony, do you think a suspension is warranted for this?
No, this is ridiculous. I get it. You're playing against a in-conference rival. I understand that, but I mean, these are college kids. I get it. I mean, they're gonna do college things, which is a lot of times includes flirting with the opposite sex. Sometimes
on the opposite team.
On the opposite team.
Chris,
as I mentioned, I don't know what you're talking about when you say flirting. But I can certainly understand why if a Mississippi State cheerleader batted her eyes at an Arkansas player that he may go over and do a photo. I think this is absurd. I think it has more to do with the fact that Arkansas is 2-9 and their coach is trying to stand up and try to tell everybody, hey, don't worry, I've got control of this program. On his way out the door, most likely, I would think.
Yeah, if you want to suspend him from actually losing 52-6, okay, that makes more sense than
posing for a picture with the other cheerleader. Come on,
that's
stupid.
It's ridiculous.
Number four.
Here we are, LaMelo Ball, Chris. He has removed himself from playing professionally in Lithuania and enrolled in the Spire Academy back here in the States. That's a high school, and they were set to start playing in a tournament today. But the La Lumiere is a school in Indiana, a high school. They pulled out of their game today because, quote, we aim to put together as competitive a schedule as possible for our team, but we have never played against a team whose roster included any players who have played at the professional level, end quote. They went on to say, we are not comfortable moving forward with our game against a professional player. Virginia's Oak Hill Academy and New Jersey's St. Benedict's Prep joined La Lumiere in canceling their games. So, Chris, should an under-18 player who has played professionally overseas be allowed to play in high school?
All I know is that Saturday Night Live, Kenan Thompson does a really funny impersonation
of LeVar Ball
when he's on the news. I think that makes up for all of the stuff that I dislike about the Ball family. As far as this story is concerned, I don't like a whole lot of things about the way high school sports are these days and the way they're headed and the direction they're headed. I liked it a little bit better when you grew up in the neighborhood and you played there. And that was about it. So, I mean, a kid going overseas and coming back, that's just beyond me. So, I'm just going to look forward to the next time.
So you agree with these teams for pulling out of the game?
I don't mind. I really don't mind. I don't mind.
Really? Tony, what do you think about it?
I don't know how I feel about it.
I wouldn't want to play against anybody with a ball on the other team, not even the Lakers.
I feel like on one hand, I think, yeah, okay, he went over, he played professionally, and you don't want to. I don't understand them not wanting to play the games. I don't see what the issue is with it, honestly.
Well, isn't it? Can you not? Correct me if I'm wrong. If you play professionally something,
there's got to be.
You can't play that sport in college. Can't go back and go, but you can go back and play it in high school?
Because he still hasn't graduated high school.
He's under 18, too.
And that's the weird part to me. It'd be different if he was, like, out of school, like, out of the age. I mean, he's still a high school kid, basically. Yeah. And I don't know. The whole, like Chris said, the whole structure of basketball, or really athletics at the high school, college level, is very confusing. And it's basically old, out-of-date rules. They need to come up with new rules that fit the new, you know, generation that we're in right now.
I mean, Oak Hill Academy and St. Benedict's Prep are powerhouses.
It's a power. That's where Carmelo Anthony went to school. That's,
yeah,
they've produced
Kevin Garnett.
And so that's what's kind of weird to me is that these guys are constantly having pro NBA type athletes on their team, and you don't want to play against a guy that's 17.
Good competition.
That's what I'm thinking. Like competition. At the end of the day, these guys are going to get exposure because scouts are going to be there to watch those games. So I don't understand what their move is by not playing.
Is Stack Jack? Was he from Oak Hill Academy as well? Steven Jackson.
I think he was.
Number three.
Fitzmagic is over and dead again. It was fun while it lasted. And Jameis Winston he has been announced as the starter against the 49ers this coming Sunday. He's going to be the starting quarterback, but the organization's trying to figure out who is their quarterback of the future. So, Tony, should Jameis Winston start and play the rest of the year, good or bad, to figure out what they have?
For the rest of the year, yes. For that reason alone, right? If you are going to be bad and you're going to need to draft a quarterback, you probably should see what this quarterback that you have now can officially do. And if it plays out, he doesn't play well, you move on. You use that pick that you're going to have that's going to be quite early in the draft. You're going to use that to get another quarterback, I assume. But I think he has to play the rest of the year for that reason alone.
Chris, what do you think?
I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should have fired their head coach about 2 years ago.
I just
do not understand how this guy has a job in the NFL. Switching back and forth on the quarterback thing. Fitzmagic was nice for a couple of weeks. We all knew that it wasn't going to last.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks ago, he gave Fitzpatrick the job the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. Until now, where he's giving it to Jameis Winston for the rest of the year. So Dirk Koetter is a mess.
Where did Dirk
Tampa
Koetter
Bay
get
is a mess.
Where did he get his
call? Boise State.
Is that? Oh.
He built them to prominence. And then,
not really.
What, really?
Patterson?
I thought Dirk Koetter was part of that whole blue turf revolution.
He was there at the very beginning, but it was the guy who ended up at Colorado who built them way up and then was on ESPN. I can't remember.
Oh, Chris Peterson.
No, it was before Peterson. Dan Hawkins.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Hawkins was the first Boise State guy, and then Chris Peterson took it to another level. But I think Dirk Koetter was there at some point. But from there to where he's messing up the NFL franchise, I'm shocked that they still have him.
Number two.
Philadelphia 76ers number one draft pick from a year ago, Markelle Fultz, has had, quote, a rough start to his NBA career, according to some experts, especially from the injury standpoint, and he is injured again. News came out today. He will not be playing or practicing for an indefinite period while he sees a shoulder specialist. So, Chris, is Markelle Fultz a bust?
Oh, to this point, he certainly is. I mean, I can't answer the question for good, because you never can tell. I mean, he may get his career in order in a couple of years, but I think Philadelphia's got to be kicking itself. I mean, they look at the team that they've put together, and they've made almost all the right calls, but to pass on Jason Tatum, to pass on some of the rest of these guys that went in the draft behind Markelle Fultz with the number one pick, it's too bad for Philadelphia, because they would have a super team if they had Jason Tatum, and not only would they have him, but Boston wouldn't have him. So that was just a big mistake that the 76ers made. I think he might need to change the scenery.
Maybe.
New team, new start, fresh start. Go somewhere else where they don't boo him all the time. Maybe he'll have a chance. But right now, he's a bust, yes.
Tony, what do you think about Markelle Fultz? Is he a bust?
I mean, right now, you'd have to say so. I think I don't fault the 76ers. There are a lot of teams that missed out on Tatum. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, there was more than just them that missed out. He's had a rough start. I mean, he came in injured. That didn't help. Lost confidence. Lost his shooting stroke. Kind of need these things to be effective in the NBA. So I think Chris is right. He might need a change of scenery at this point. There's just too much negativity built up around him in Philadelphia.
Totally.
He kind of needs to get out, and I think a change of scenery would be great for him.
I kind of feel bad for the guy. He's never really had a chance.
He's never been one that's like popped off or said anything. He just hasn't had good luck.
He's just been bad.
No, you're saying the truth. It's just, we're feeling bad for the guy. He's just been terrible.
He hasn't done anything wrong. He just hasn't been very good. It's been the problem.
Longtime Major League Baseball player Adrian Beltre has retired after 21 seasons in the big leagues. He racked up 5 seasons with more than 100 RBIs and 12 seasons with 20 or more home runs, including his best year in 2004 with the Dodgers when he hit .334, 48 home runs, and 121 RBIs. That year, he finished second in NL MVP voting behind Barry Bonds. He was an all-star 4 times, 5 gold gloves, and 4 silver slugger awards. So, Chris, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
No.
Why?
Not on my ballot. I kind of lump Beltre's 48 home run season in with the steroid era, personally. I don't know that that's fair, but that's when it had occurred. Rest of his career, 28, 32, 30, 19, 18, 32. Never approach those kind of numbers again. He played 21 years, and he piled up some remarkable accomplishments. But I just never felt Beltre was a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he'll eventually get in, but I don't think he'll go on the first one.
Tony?
Yes, I think he is. 21 years in itself is a huge
that's pretty good, right?
Long time. Huge accomplishment. And he was productive in each of those 21 seasons.
Even last year, he was still all right.
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
Chris brings up the 48 homers. He also said that there was another player hit quite a few homers around that time, and Joe Mauer. Are we going to add those to the steroid total too?
So yeah,
I don't know. For me, the longevity in itself is a huge deal. But then when you add the 3,000 hits and the numbers that he accumulated over that 21-year career, it's a no-brainer.
Did you guys know Joe Mauer retired?
Yes, you broke the news. We definitely remember.
Yes.
286 career batting average, 477 home runs. It does sound like a Hall of Fame career, but I think there's going to be enough people who are uninformed like myself that are not going to vote him in on the first ballot.
That very well may be true.
That's my feeling on that. Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, one of the best, joins us here on 97.3 The Fan on this Thanksgiving week to talk some National Football League. Brian, how are you? And happy Turkey Week to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys, too, as well, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We are very pleased to have you on the program. I'll ask you the question I've been asking everybody tonight.
Yeah.
The two teams that played last night, Rams, Chiefs, those two versions, could those be Super Bowl champions? I mean, just based on offense alone.
Well, yeah, I mean, both of them have, you know, exquisite offenses. You know, I mean, you can put up 50 points, you can win a Super Bowl. We saw that last year. You know, there wasn't any defense played in the Super Bowl a year ago. There wasn't any defense played last night. I mean, there were splash plays, but by and large, you know, I mean, it was a quarterback carousel last night. It was like a passing academy. I felt like I was watching one of Eli Manning's scrimmages down there in Louisiana. No, but I mean, look, I mean, look, when you have great quarterback play out there and good coaching, I mean, and you got elite players. I mean, it's fun to watch. But yeah, those teams are capable of going. I mean, you gotta, you know, can you play that way in January in inclement weather and some of the other places that you might have to go to Pittsburgh or New England or wherever you might have got to go? Can you throw the ball around the yard like that?
Brian, but let me ask you about the offense. We talked a little bit about the Rams and Chiefs.
Okay.
The Saints obviously are one of the other better offense.
Yep.
You've looked at a lot of film on these three teams. Which of the three has the best offense in your mind?
Well, I saw the Saints the last 2 weeks in a row. I did the game in Cincinnati 2 weeks ago, and they fired their defensive coordinator, I think, before, you know, the final gun went off. I mean, nobody could stop them, and the Eagles were helpless last week. I mean, he's thrown to Austin Carr and – you know, Kirkwood and guys that, you know, were you know, running the scout team the week before.
Right.
You know, and now, you know, they're throwing touchdown passes to him. Drew right now, he's like, you know, it's like when Steph Curry gets in that groove on three-point shots. He doesn't feel like he can miss. And I feel like that's how Drew's playing right now. I don't think he feels like he can miss on his throws. And he simply isn't missing. So if you ask me right now, as good as either one of those teams, and I'm a huge Patrick Mahomes fan, and I love Sean McVay, but I would say that the Saints are a little better because I think their offensive line is better than both those teams right now.
Yeah, offensive line is something we don't talk a lot about, right? Brian Baldinger for this NFL Network, of course. I mean, because every time they break down, it's a touchdown for the other team. We saw it twice to the Chiefs last night on great plays by Aaron Donald. That was what was kind of interesting about that game was that there was three touchdowns scored by the defense on a night when people would say there was no defense.
Well, I mean, look, I said there were splash plays. And so, you know, I mean, Aaron Donald went down to New Orleans 2 weeks ago, and he didn't get a sniff of Drew Brees.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, offensive line play, it matters. Now, I talked to the Saints the week after, and I was like, how did you do that? Because Dan Rausch was the offensive line coach. He goes, they were up burning midnight oil, like, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Drew, Sean, Rausch, or the group, Lombardi, they're all in there, and they're trying to figure out how to formation Aaron Donald so that he's double-teamed all the time. And they figured it out. And so that was figured out on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, how to deal with Aaron Donald. You know, and the Chiefs need to do a better job with that.
Brian Baldwin joins us here on 97.3 The Fan. Gwynn and Chris, he works for the NFL Network. Brian, Andrew Luck has quietly kind of flown under the radar after missing, you know, the last season with the shoulder injury. What has Quentin Nelson been able to do for that offensive line that has kept, you know, Luck upright? Because for a while there, it seemed like every time he stepped back, he was in desperation trying to get out of the way of these defensive linemen. What have they been able to do to keep him upright this year?
Well, he hasn't been sacked since October 5th.
Wow.
When they played the Patriots. So, you know, the fifth week of the season is the last time he was sacked. So he's thrown 400 passes this year. He's been sacked 10 times. And all of them in the first 5 weeks of the season. Quentin Nelson is the single best offensive lineman to come in this league in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And he's made Ryan Kelly better, and he's made Anthony Costanzo better, and Mark Lewinsky is a tough guy that's grounding inside. But Frank Reich has got a great system. I mean, you know, they're two tight ends, three tight ends. They protect the edges. They protect first. They don't spend a lot of time trying to throw the ball and see how far Andrew Luck can throw it. They got one of them on Sunday to T.Y. Hilton. But they throw to their backs. They throw to their tight ends. They move the sticks. They don't turn it over. The quarterback is their number one in the league in third down conversions right now because they're not in negative situations. They're playing really smart football. And Andrew Luck is, he's the maestro right now. And, you know, a lot of people don't know who some of the people are that he's handing off to and throwing it to, but it doesn't matter because they're all productive right now. The running backs and some of the wide receivers and the tight ends that, you know, that you may not know, I mean, they're really contributing.
It's incredible how many good quarterbacks there are. Really, it's just amazing, the National Football League right now. So fun. Brian Baldinger.
There's still not enough, though. There's still not enough good ones.
Not enough.
I mean, Tampa might say that we don't have a good one.
Yeah, I know.
Miami might say Jacksonville.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know. The whole state of Florida needs a quarterback.
Yeah.
Speaking of good quarterbacks, a guy that's never won a Super Bowl, been to a Super Bowl, is Phillip Rivers. And I think as little as a week ago or so, some people thought maybe this would be the year. And then they stubbed their foot against Denver last week, and everybody's kind of forgotten about the Chargers. We've obviously forgotten about them here in San Diego, but what do you think of that team? Does it have any chance to compete with the upper echelon of the AFC once you get to postseason time?
Yeah, they do. I mean, look, they played Denver last week. And when you play these division games, I mean, Chris Harris Jr. and Von Miller, and I mean, they've been going up against Phillip Rivers a long time, twice every year. So there's very little that they don't know about each other. Now, Phillip Rivers, you know, they had a missed handoff on second down, with a minute and a half to go. I don't know, between him and Melvin Gordon, for whatever reason, they went the wrong way. And then, you know, Phillip Rivers had a meltdown there on that last play that he saw Von Miller's just lurking for another interception. So he threw it in the ground and stopped the clock, and it was dumb. But they're a good football team. And we got Joey Bosa back last week. And, look, he's got to get himself back into shape. But that's an elite player. And you add him to Melvin Ingram and Derwin James and some of the guys on that side of the ball to go with what they have offensively. I mean, they're going to compete. I mean, they won six in a row. So, you know, I mean, they weren't going to win it out, but they still have a chance to win 10, 11, 12 games before this thing is over. So I think the Chargers are going to make the postseason. And I think people may be surprised by what they do in the postseason. They do a lot of things really well.
Brian Balding joins us here, NFL Network. You can also reach him follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. Brian, I think I kind of know the answer based on some of the answers you've given earlier in this interview. Who do you think is the front runner for MVP right now?
Well, I mean, I think you have to kind of start with Drew Brees. I mean, they're the hottest team in the league right now. You know, and he's playing the best football he's ever played. Wow. But, you know, not too far behind him is going to be Patrick Mahomes and what he's doing.
Right.
Or Todd Gurley. I mean, there's going to be some candidates for it. You know, and if Aaron Donald keeps playing the way he's playing and making the kind of plays in that type of a game,
right,
he's not just defensive MVP. I mean, if he breaks Mike Strahan's sack record and he just continues to force fumbles and help them score defensive touchdowns, I mean, you're going to have to put him in that category of MVP of the league. Now, it's hard to take it out of the quarterback's hands. He touches every play. But right now, I mean, for whatever it's worth on November 20th, I mean, I don't know how you could give it to anybody but Drew Brees the way he's playing.
It's amazing. It's crazy how things change in the NFL from year to year, because last year was the Patriots and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. I don't think you should ever give up on the Patriots. I don't care what happens and how bad they looked the last time they played. The Eagles are really struggling, but you look up, they're still only a couple games out of first place because that division is still, you know, so mediocre. What do you think about those two Super Bowl teams in terms of the last 6 weeks of the season? Can they make a run?
Well, the Patriots are going to win the AFC East, so they're going to be
right in
the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's, you know, if they're going to win home field or anything like that. I don't know that. But they're going to be in the playoffs. Now, for the Eagles, they can still win the East. It's not a strong division at all. They play the Giants this week, who've won two in a row, and they actually ran the ball really well for the first time, but it was against Tampa, so who knows. But, I mean, the Eagles, if you look at their secondary right now, it looks like the fourth preseason game. I mean, nobody knows who Chandon Sullivan is and, you know, Bosby and some of the guys that are playing. I mean, it looks like that's how down the depth chart they are. But that's not the excuse. Offensively, they're a mess. They can't run a play without making a mistake. And it's not just the quarterback. I mean, they lost the center in the game, Kelsey, but Wisniewski's been playing a long time. He makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes on that side of the ball. Everybody. And they just can't get out of their own way. And last year, they were number one in the NFL in third down conversions. And the other day against New Orleans, they couldn't make a third down conversion. So I don't know what has to happen first. I mean, you could say, well, the quarterback has to play better. Yeah, I mean, he can't play better. But he's not the only problem either. I mean, it's a lot of problems on that side of the ball right now. And until they fix that, they're not going to make the postseason.
Everybody thought they would, and they may miss out. Brian Baldinger, great stuff. Enjoy your work on the NFL Network. Thanks for joining us here in San Diego. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Lynn and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, this is Tony's last show before Thanksgiving. Coach John Quintero will be with me tomorrow. So, top five Thanksgiving foods. I can't see even competing with you on this because I just know that your list is going to be sumptuous.
I like to think so.
Do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Number five. Thank you, Thomas. I always forget that there's numbers with this one. It's so funny that you said what you said going out at the last break, because number five for me is cranberries. Yeah, I really like them. And my mother-in-law's husband, Franz, makes fantastic cranberry sauce. Like, really off the charts. So if you make it right, I think it can be really delicious, and I sneak it in there at number five.
I like the way you're talking.
So there you go.
Number five for me, smoked turkey.
Smoked turkey?
Smoked turkey, not your regular baked.
Does that mean is that the deep fried one?
No, no,
or is that even different than that?
Hold your horses.
Oh, we're not to that.
We're going to get to that one.
All right.
But number five, I'm going to smoke turkey. You got to obviously have a smoker, a good one. But, you know, the meat comes off as a turkey normally does. But it's got that smoky hickory flavor to it.
All right.
Got yourself a nice little smoked turkey. Number five.
Number four.
Number four for me, you're going to kind of see as we go along here that I'm not really all that humongous of a Thanksgiving food fan.
Okay.
My number four is gravy.
Oh.
I mean, you got to give me some gravy all over my Thanksgiving dinner because some of the food I don't really think is all that great on Thanksgiving, but the gravy's always sweet. Gobble, gobble. Shut that guy up.
Number four on my list is the fried turkey.
Oh, now we got the deep fried turkey.
My mother started doing this, I don't know, 10, 11 years back, doing this fried turkey. And the first time we didn't get a chance to watch. The second time, we realized how much work it is. You got to have like two people so you don't set your whole kitchen on fire.
Yes, you got to be careful.
You got to be careful, but my mom does. And this whole segment right here is dedicated to my mom's cooking. So that is number four on the list. For me, Thanksgiving.
I have a feeling that as you continue your countdown, you may come up with three more ways that they cook turkey.
I could.
My number three is apple pie.
Oh, gosh. That's
and I'm adding a la mode because, as I said last week, one of my guilty pleasures is ice cream. So please throw a couple of heaping scoops of ice cream on my apple pie.
Pie just missed my list. Number six on my list.
Got to number three for me.
Number three, what is Thanksgiving without homemade mac and cheese? Homemade mac and cheese.
Wait, what?
I don't think that's ever made the roster in my house.
Me neither.
Well, I mean, it's all in what kind of cheese you're using, right?
Oh, I can imagine how good it is.
You gotta use real cheddar / I don't know what other cheese my mom uses, but it's delicious. That's all I got to say.
Tillamook?
Tillamook. My dad was a big fan of Tillamook.
You're going to Lucerne?
I don't think mac and cheese ever made my roster on Thanksgiving, but I may suggest it this year
because I might have to bring you a little bowl of it then after I get back.
Please do.
Number two
for me is we just kind of bake the turkey regular. I got to have the dark meat though.
Mm.
I can't the white meat turkey. Some people really like that, a little classier. Too dry for me.
It's dry.
Don't
it
enjoy
dry.
It really all that much.
I'm
so
with you.
I got to have dark meat turkey. That's my number two.
Oh, it's my turn. Huh?
Your turn.
Number two. I know you guys probably all have dressing on Thanksgiving. At the Gwynn household, we do something that's called oyster dressing. Fantastic.
Oyster dressing. You're going to need to explain a little bit because my interest.
You're simple. You know, you had dressing before, right?
Yes, it didn't make my list because I don't care for it very
simple
much.
Simple dressing, but now you add the oysters in there.
Oysters?
Yes. Yes.
It's a stuffing. It says mom's oyster stuffing.
Stuffing, dressing.
Dressing, stuffing, it's the same thing. It works. I understood what he was talking about.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like salad dressing.
No. Dressing, stuffing is basically a bunch of bread.
Right.
And then you just add stuff to it. And
did you know
stuffing,
what I was talking about, Thomas?
And you stick it into the turkey.
No, you didn't know either.
You didn't know that one either?
Wow.
I thought you were talking salad
so
dressing.
Neither of you guys could ever call it dressing. It has to be called stuffing at your house.
Huh. Interesting.
I feel for your house. Okay.
Number one,
this is a runaway winner for me. My wife makes the best on the planet, and her mom makes the second best on the planet. They're one and one A. Lumpy mashed potatoes with the skins on.
Ooh, I like that. The skins.
That's how the Lori makes them. Bunch of chunks of potato, and the skin is on. That's how I like my mashed potatoes.
Like,
that's my number one.
Number one for me, and I'm in a group family text right now, and the question is popped.
Oh, okay.
Who wants oxtail? I had to put my order in. Oxtail.
What?
Yes, man.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
You've never had oxtail before?
I don't think so. Honey, I'm not coming home for Thanksgiving this year. I'm going to be going to Tony's house because they sound like they got a whole bunch of good stuff up there that I've never even heard of.
A culinary name for the tail of cattle.
Hence the name oxtail? I mean, is it hard to figure out?
A cow is not an ox.
There is not a single pilgrim that was eating oxtail.
Look how disgusting these look.
Nah.
That's not cooked, though.
That is disgusting.
I can't believe that's on your Thanksgiving. Your Thanksgiving menu is insane.
Those we had many of people over our Thanksgiving too.
Not bad.
Very rarely is it just family. So
I can see why cranberry sauce wasn't a thought though.
It kind of slides.
You have
it kind of slides down the
you
list.
You got some. All right, oxtail. Wow. All right.
That is.
There's our countdown.
Have you tried it, Scraby?